Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here as today's host of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, Amazon, software, entrepreneurial stuff, you name it. We're going to get into it all today. I'm super excited about today's guest. This is one I made special space for because I'm just ready, regardless of time. We're just going to get into not only the company that he's representing, but even his origin story. We're going to have a lot of fun. Before we jump in, shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Justin Cobb, founder of Carbon 6. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to warm up a little before the show. You know, we've had about, we were both at Prosper together, but I think it was a little late and we were a little bit tipsy. So
that was a fun night.
Yeah, that was a great night. A big part of the industry and community and what we're going to be talking about, you know, even today. But super excited to have you on. You're calling in from Puerto Rico. I can see the palm trees behind you. That's part of the story too. But I love getting the show started, just getting to know more about your entrepreneurial journey specifically. Let's back up way before Carbon 6 or as far back as you want to go. You know, what's your first entrepreneurial memory, or did you always know you're going to be an entrepreneur?
So the first entrepreneurial moment that I had was selling blueberries when I was like 8 years old. So okay. We had a bunch of blueberry bushes in the neighborhood, in the yard. I grew up in Connecticut, and my brother and I, he was 12 at the time, had this idea. We were going to pick the blueberries and put a little stand out in front of the yard, and there was a pretty busy road, and we were going to make a sign. And so we picked a bunch of blueberries, and I came home with my mother the next day from shopping, and we drove in, and my brother was sitting there. And I love my brother. He's definitely not a, he's sitting there. He's got a table, a little piece of paper that says, you know, blueberries, $1.25 a pint, as if someone was going to drive by going 40 miles per hour, like see it and stop.
Right.
So I go in and we get a wood sign and we spray paint on it. And I still have it. It says pints, $1.25, quarts, $2.50, I think it was. And then I was this little kid. I was, you know, really small. I was eight, which is young, but I was very small, 8 year old. And so I go out and I'd run backwards along the front of the stone wall, sometimes like fall over on purpose or whatever, but do whatever we could do to get people's attention. And we made like $60 like the first
year,
you know? And then I had a break from being an entrepreneur and I tried a bunch of different jobs and I found that I was very bad at working for somebody else. Really bad. I think I probably had 55 different jobs on the shoreline.
Holy moly.
Never for longer than 3.5 weeks. Lots of like waiting tables and busing, a lot of restaurant stuff, but also some manual labor and a bunch of different things. And then I went to college and cause that's what you do, and graduated a degree in psychology from a school in New Orleans. And I was set to go to law school and I was playing music. That's what I really wanted to do. And my parents really wanted me to go to law school. And so me and my buddies, we were traveling all around and we would do all sorts of stuff. Like you know, buy cigarettes in Kansas for $2 and then sell them outside a concert in California for like $7. You can get a lot of money for a pack of cigarettes at the end of a long, long festival day.
I have one for you here. Hold on just a second. Because we talked about our, I think it's so interesting, just like the path that like entrepreneurs or founders take, like to get to where they're at. And I haven't counted up all my jobs, but I've always thought like, I know I have a ton, like from warehouse work to bartending to everything. I want to know, because I'm like 55 sounds like a lot, but I would think I'm somewhere like 20 something, you know? But this part about selling stuff while on tour, like to make money while you're playing music. So I toured for 4.5 years, playing metal, and we would buy the guys in the band would buy like broken instruments at One Stop, like off Craigslist, fix them on the road in the van or whatever at like the downtime, and then sell them in the next town. That was our little hustle.
I like it.
We would just buy broken instruments that people are getting rid of or free stuff. And the guys were all just like, they figured out how to be techies and roadies and stuff. And it was mainly the instruments that were paying our way to play music. Okay, so.
We did cigarettes. We'd get like white t-shirts and screen print Bob Marley's face on them. And they would cost us $3 and we'd sell them for $15. I mean, a lot of it was going to concerts too. I was always been really into, I probably still go to like 40, 50 concerts a year.
Yeah.
Live music is kind of my thing. So we're driving.
I went to three this week. It just happened to be.
That's amazing.
Intervals metal. Intervals was a metal show and Animals as Leaders. Then I went to Charlie Crockett, which is
cool.
Real country.
Yeah.
And I think that was it. I think there's two, and then I'm going to one this week. So
the country singer Eric Church canceled his show the other day to go to the UNC Duke game.
Oh my God. I honestly like don't even know how I feel about that, because I'm just like, for so many things, I see him as like, as a founder that gets overwhelmed. Sometimes you just want to be like, F it. Like, I'm out. I'm doing my thing. Whatever responsibility was, I need a break. You know, I don't, something. And I don't have to do this. And then on the other side, as a fan, you know, where that's had maybe my biggest artist or whatever be a dick to me or something, and it just kind of ruins it for me. Think about all those Eric Church fans. They were like, you really would rather watch other people play than like, you know, your fans have paid money to be here. So I'm conflicted.
Yeah, there was a couple that had bought tickets from Alaska to go to the show.
Wow.
And like Airbnb and da 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 da. But it is what it is.
Is what it is. Hopefully he takes care of them, because that's, you know, whoever was there gets their money and everything. But okay, so shows, I have a massive list I'm going to share with you just because.
This is 2002. And okay. We're driving like a Volkswagen bus around and it breaks down. We're back in New Hampshire, which was kind of like our home base at the time. Graduated college in New Orleans. My dad flew down. We kind of like hiked the Appalachian Trail, basically like walked halfway back to Connecticut.
No big deal.
New Hampshire, and we were going all over the place. And so we needed money for a new engine. And so I think it was $531 a piece that we needed. And took a job waiting tables, lasted like a couple shifts. The manager upset me or something. I didn't have a great attitude about criticism back then, as I look back on it. And took a job in Boston, like got a Boston Herald. You used to look for jobs in the newspaper. I'm dating myself. And went down and ended up taking a job selling coupons door to door for like Blockbuster Video, Domino's Pizza, local restaurants and golf courses in the winter in Boston. So like started on November 4th, it gets dark at like 3 o'clock. Boston people are tough. You know, it's like, there's a reason why there's a disproportionately high amount of stand-up comedians that are from Boston, right? Like they'll boo Tom Brady, you know, fourth quarter of the Super Bowl if he throws an incomplete pass when they're up by 20 points. That's just kind of the way that they are.
Literally, that's the truth, because I got picked up. I went to Babson for this like a Goldman Sachs Business Accelerator with Marknology a couple years back. And it was like, dude picks me up in a black car from the airport. I mean, that was a first for me. I was like, this is awesome. He has a sign with my name on it. And he was like, literally, like as a Chiefs fan, we look at Tom Brady and we're like, oh my God, every reporter loves him. Like, you know, everyone, like he's beat us a bunch of times, like all this kind of stuff. We ruin people's fantasy, whether they're there. This driver is like just blasting Tom Brady. Like, hey, we don't want him. Get rid of him. Like he had just won or something, you know, and they're just like, he's like, we don't want him. I'm like, I was so surprised that like, if you get in a car in Kansas City, people are like, love Pat Mahomes, you know? So I don't know. You're right. Okay. So you're in Boston. I'm sorry. I'm derailing us a little. I get excited about it.
Pat Mahomes, family.
Oh my gosh. I got drama that I can't share on the show.
So I take that job, and originally it was just to make $500. I make $500. I call my bandmates. None of them had gotten a job yet. So now I stayed. I was going to quit that business, but I went back in the next day, and they said, "Oh, what's your goal now?" And I said, "Now I need $1,593 more dollars." So after like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, I'd saved $2,000, and it was the most money. I felt so proud. And up until that point, like, it just felt different. And, I was almost starting to doubt myself in terms of like my own ambition level and my work ethic. There was things I obsessed over, like I obsessed over the guitar, and I wrestled in high school and college, and like obsessed over that, but I just hadn't found that in something that was going to make me money and make me, you know, productive in that way.
On that thing right there, I think there's something big I want to share here is like, when I was a musician, I was raised as a missionary kid. Money was like not something I needed. It was just a necessity thing to get me to the next place, right? I'm a musician. Yep. I'm touring. I'm living with dudes in a van, you know, on the road. Material things just wasn't a need for me. It was this like relationship with it. So it was like money was always my problem, but I never thought of it as like a need, meaning like I would work my butt off 3 jobs or whatever to be able to go on tour for 6 weeks, and money was the issue there. And then you start like solving that just even a little bit, like, you know, where you save $2,000, this thing that's always been an issue for you, you see that stress kind of go away. That one thing that's been your focus for so long, that confidence that comes with, I think, even as a person, just like conquering that thing, that relationship with that money. Once I saw that, hey, I can be good with money, or I can manage money, or I can save.
And you can,
it was like a switch for me.
And you can do a lot of great things.
I can help others.
Right? Yeah, to a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's worth noting. So 2 months before I start in that Adoro sales company, I was a total hippie. So I'm sitting at the table with my dad, and we're talking about Bill Gates, and like 19-year-old me or 21-year-old me or whatever it was is going, oh, like that guy's not that great. And like computer, like maybe they're the devil. I made some crazy like hippie 19-year-old, you know, comment. My dad's like, oh, who do you think is a good person? I said, Mother Teresa. And he said, Mother Teresa's a good person. Who do you think's done more good for the world? And I'm like, Mother Teresa, by a mile. What are you talking about? And he says, all right, so tomorrow, go do some research and come back to dinner. Tomorrow night, I'm going to present an argument that Bill Gates has done more good for the world than Mother Teresa. So
wow.
I go to the Yale Law School library the next day, which is 15 minutes from me, which is one of the schools that I had been considering going to, and do some research. And I come back, and I was all proud to talk about how many hospitals and how many children saved, and they felt like big numbers. And then I said, and has inspired countless others. And my dad's like, well, how do you count it if it's countless? And I'm like, you know what I mean? And then he rolls off
semantics.
And then he's like, you know, credited with saving however many hundreds of millions of lives through medication, and gave this tens of millions of computers to inner city schools in the States, and on and on and on and on and on. And after, he said, you know, you want to make a difference. There's only a couple different ways to do it. Either got to have influence or tremendous financial resources. And ideally you have both. And that always kind of stuck with me. Number one, because I feel like I got destroyed in an argument that I was somehow confident in going into it as an ignorant kid. But so I start in that company, and it's something feels different. And the idea of the business is, you, if you do well, you can open up your own company. And that's just really motivating. And I see people that are talking big and they have big goals. And the guy who's running the office is like 26 and he's making, you know, 7-8 grand a week. And the guy who was his mentor was 28 and he was making 20,000 a week. And it turned out he had wrestled at the same college that I'd wrestled at, the same weight class. And like when he came in and gave a speech, kind of like a morning meeting before we went out to the field, I made that connection. I remember seeing his name like on the wrestling room wall. And so long story short, I was just feeling different about what I was doing. And it was strange because sometimes the medium was door-to-door sales, which, you know, I'm talking about in this like romantic, poetic way, but it's the way that it felt at the time. It was just different. What I didn't realize, but I quickly realized, was I was feeling an entrepreneurial spirit for the first time. Mm. And that I had all the motivation in the world, right?
And you had someone to look up to, right? That was relatable, meaning like the wrestling at the same school. And like,
yeah.
I'm doing this thing and kind of being successful at it, and look at what he did, and someone attainable, like something attainable.
And it just, the people felt, they seemed free. So all the fears that I had about what I was gonna do with my career, like that I can go to a great law school and go out, and when will I be free? When will I feel free? When will I feel like I can do what I want to do? And the answer for many people is never, you know, it's never. And there was this one day that I'll never forget. I was We were selling like these coupons. We call them VIP cards, but they were like laminated, pretty looking coupons for dependable dry cleaners. It's a dry cleaner in the US. And we're going business to business. And I'm in this law firm. And I was a little bit embarrassed about what I was doing. It's not the
same. Because you want to be a lawyer.
Yeah, especially around him. So I was like, just so you know, like, I'm probably going to Yale Law School next year. Blah, 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 blah. I'm just doing this for like a summer job. And he's like, well, why do you want to? It wasn't even the summer, like it was the winter. And he's like, well, why do you want to go to law school? I'm like, because I want to be like you. And I was like, aren't you happy? And he looked at me and he's like, pays well. And I was like, ooh. And at that moment, I realized like I was making $100 a day commission only selling coupons in the winter in Boston and was substantially happier and meant more mentally free than he was. And he was a named partner on Newbury Street in, you know, one of the top law firms in Boston. And that made a huge impression. So
let's pause there for a second, just a second, because yeah. I think I don't always have the best memory about everything. But I can specifically remember, as someone who didn't document my whole journey, and you know, I've been in the Amazon, like helping brands on Amazon 11 years in that space. I can't remember everything. I can remember these like moments where, one of them was I went to Rally House. I was an e-commerce manager. And at first I was just trying to be the best e-commerce manager. Like, you know, what's the top end of an e-commerce manager? I went to school for computer science. And I looked online at that time, this is probably like 2010, 11. Okay. The top end of an e-commerce manager was like 100,000 in New York or something like that, right? I'm in Kansas City making like 42 or something. And so I'm like, okay, there's some, you know, 100,000 in Kansas City goes a long way, or used sure. to at least. And so I'm like, okay, that was my path. I didn't see entrepreneurship. And I started interviewing. I interviewed at a company called Rally House, which is like sports gear and stuff here. They're kind of really big. And, you know, so I'd have been working all day with sports and like, okay, watching games and shooting out emails and promotions for the winners of this thing and this thing. And I'm like, that doesn't sound so bad. And they were offering me 70K, which compared to 42 was like, okay, this will be a big deal. My parents will be proud, you know? And I'm always trying to prove myself to everyone. Like that's my struggle, you know? And I don't need to. You know, but that's like my struggle.
Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, everything's probably both, but do you think?
I just wish it was like proving it to myself more so like what I'm capable of than it is like ever outwardly. You know, that would be more pure to me. But the other one was Lockton. I don't know if you've heard of Lockton. They're a financial firm, very prestigious. If you work there around here, you're like, you know, that's a great resume move. And I went in there and everyah was in these like suits and like, I mean, like if you're at a date and you tell a girl you work at Lockton, like that's a thing, you know? And so like, that's a prestigious thing as someone that's family didn't even go to school or like have degrees or things like that. I work at Lockton, like that would have been a badge, you know? And I was proud of honestly, one of the moments I'm proud of myself because I just left there. I remember flipping it on her when she was like offering me kind of the job. And I was just like, I think I'm interviewing you because like, it's like super quiet in here. And I'm like, everyone looks like they're in a tie. And, you know, when you're in IT and e-commerce, like you don't have to be that way. And so I'm like, what is, no one looks happy in here. There's no vibes in here. There's no energy in here. And I stayed with my $42,000 a year job and I built Marknology instead of taking those two jobs, which, you
Great
know,
move.
That
was,
yeah, thank you. Like in hindsight, it was.
You might've gotten caught, right?
I walked into that law firm is essentially how I felt. And I saw some people maybe that were like where I wanted to be. That company or that position. And I'm just like, you guys are not having a great time.
And in general, that's just great advice for someone trying to figure out what they want to do with their life. Project where you could be 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now.
Take them to coffee.
Or five like, years from now.
Go interview them. People like all
And
the
just
time
start
I ask
out with,
like,
are you happy? Just start out with, are you happy?
Yep. I know when people are happy or not, because if they're happy with what they do, they talk about it.
Totally.
So, but I just like, I love sharing this because anyone that's listening is just like, these are the things that we all have in common. Doesn't matter what we're doing, how we're doing it. Like, you know, how'd you get there? How'd you get successful? People ask me like, oh my God, how'd you get into this? Like, well, I had a light bulb moment that I was like, I'm chasing money. That's why I'm on this interview. And I've like, you know, worked it out with my boss to get out and get the free time. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm not sacrificing money for happiness for a short-term game. That's just like not what I'm, that was a moment. And there's these light bulb moments that if you pay attention, you know, are there. The other one was traffic. Fuck traffic. So
before saying, realized I wasn't a great employee, had this energy being an entrepreneur, learned that like the rocket fuel, for me at least, was, and I know we spoke about this and we share this in common, you know, in the past conversation, was teaching someone how to have that freedom, teaching someone how to not need to continue running on the hamster wheel, teaching someone how to work for themselves, to learn a set of skills, which whether it's leadership, it's SEO, it's e-commerce, it's in whatever medium it is.
Mindset.
Yeah. And there's a certain type of person that's built a certain type of way that's looking for that. And, you know, I think that, that's the best feeling I've found, you know? Yeah, it's an incredible feeling. And that's really what a lot of our purpose is, which we'll get into later, I'm sure, you know, at Carbon Six is to empower entrepreneurial e-commerce and have people take control of their lives. And like that's said in such a hyperbolic way so many times. And I don't mean in like the running ads and like, here's the Lambo and here's like the fake private jet from the set that I rented way, but in a very real way where when you can make decisions based on, from a position of control, whether that's $200 a day or $2,000 a day or $20,000 a day, everyone's gonna have a different kind of like number and appetite for work for how far they wanna take that. But I've just found that the single most rewarding thing I've been able to do in my professional life, and now I've been lucky enough to be doing it and being part of people's journeys for 20 years, is to give them that control that in many cases they didn't realize that they had. They didn't realize it was an option for them. And not just doing that, you know, here, but doing that abroad. You know, when we went into Poland and we were able to teach people in Poland how to make, you know, really good money and learn really great skills that they weren't otherwise going to learn, that wasn't the most profitable part of me building my direct sales army, but it was in some ways the most rewarding, because the lack of options that and e-commerce has changed that. I mean, it's really, it's changed that in such a major way. It's a very beautiful thing.
I have to agree. I'm nobody from nowhere with no real pedigree. I mean, I have amazing parents and, but as far as like politically or in business or any of those things, you know, first get a college degree, e-commerce leveled the playing field.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. E-commerce leveled the playing field for me. And if we were talking about social content and putting it out and, you know, you're projecting the best of whatever you want people to see, or some people even get popular on negative stuff, you know, so there's both sides of that. Negative stuff seems to trend higher, you know, so there's all kinds of stuff there. But for me, that's what my social media has been about. You know, I'm calling it the legacy chapter, and my hashtag is Watch Me Work, because for the last 8+ years, I've just been documenting my grind. You know, and people talk about that grind culture, hustle culture. Sure, you take anything to extreme, it's bad. But, you know, it's just like constantly being on, constantly chasing that freedom. And for me, I was raised like in Africa as a homeschooler, you know, and it was my parents were there teaching English. They, at that time, I thought it was a great thing that they were doing. They're giving, speaking English, you know, in any of those countries gives you a much larger chance of being employed and all those things. And so they're using Christian curriculum. I was using the same curriculum they were using, to be honest with you. So if you think I'm smart, like, you know, they're getting good stuff. And that's what my parents were doing. They were just like teaching, you know, teaching English over there. They're French missionaries. Well, my day would start like, you know, this isn't like an American day, but in Africa, you wake up early because it's hot and the sun's coming in. You can't sleep anymore, really. It's just like hot. And so you get up and I'm speaking in generalities, but bear with me.
Yeah, I mean, there's,
you know, there's all different parts of Africa, but where, you know, where I was in Botswana and Congo, hot, super hot. And you'd get up. I would, you know, not up super crazy early to catch the bus at 5:30.
Of course, no air conditioning.
No air conditioning fans. And like, yeah, definitely not during the day.
Blowing around and the hot air.
Exactly. So you're like, you can't be indoors even that long, right? You know, we would wake up. I would go through we had 5 subjects. It was like meritocracy in regards to like, get your work done. I had set goals, get your work done, go play. So from a young age, like from like kindergarten up, I had this level of freedom that like whenever I came back to the US, I didn't have. And it wasn't because of wealth. It wasn't because of any of those things that provided freedom for me as a kid. It was like just simply environment and rules. And so just adjusted really bad here. But I always had this just like desire for freedom. And that's why I was playing music and touring. That's what I was chasing, really, creative freedom and expression and all of those things. That was, for me, it was like a lot of stuff inside of me that like metal music was an outlet. I just threw down. We did create, you know, jump around on stage and let out a lot of energy. And it was like a real transition time for me. But I hate the financial thing wasn't resolved. Like, and meaning like it was always a struggle. Come back, work three jobs, be exhausted, like, you know, go back on tour. And I realized I didn't have true freedom until I had financial freedom. And so for me, I was settling for like a freedom that's like maybe 70% or whatever, whatever you can estimate there. And so the financial part, which e-commerce, bringing it back home to e-commerce, and then Carbon 6, even a tool to help in e-commerce and create, you know, more entrepreneurs, or even I'm an agency owner now helping multiple, you know, brands and companies and sellers, give them the tools to be able to just like excel in the space. E-commerce changed my life. So I'm like a big fan. It's real with me.
And excelling in the space really means breaking free from a lot of chains that most people are bound by. And that's a pretty special thing.
Yeah. We're going to get into that. Before we do, shout out again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Okay, let's jump into Carbon 6. Sure. We've talked about the origins. Actually, I think before we do, we need to share one more part of the story.
Okay.
And that's where, you know, you went from Europe and the Leadership Academy and everything you're doing. I know it's like grown and evolved into a whole bunch of things. But we haven't had this intro into where exactly you and e-commerce met.
Sure. Okay, so we're living in Atlanta. Lockdown start. There was rioters. We live right down the street from the governor. The governor's place in Atlanta, and it's just kind of a crazy time. I think there was like a Wendy's that got burned down that day. And my wife looks at me and she's like, "Hey, can we get out of here for a couple weeks or a couple months?" So we get on a plane, we come down to Puerto Rico, we find this amazing neighborhood called Dorado Beach. We fall in love with it. We decide we're going to stay here. And a lot of the leaders in my direct sales business, you know, are really ready to take the torch. And they're kind of telling me like, "Please don't come to the meeting. Let us close it and like, let us do it." And so I start to have more time than I've had in a very long time and have some money. So I start doing a bunch of investment stuff, and that's my plan. I'm going to become a great investor. And I'm looking at a bunch of different deals, and had some people are mentoring me there. Realized really quickly that it just doesn't get my juices flowing, that I wanted to operate and build something.
What did you start with? Was it just like quickly, was it real estate? Was it like buying other businesses, so franchises? Yeah, like what were you looking at?
So a couple of my co-founders with Carbon 6, I've had lots of success like in junior mining and in tech and some other stuff in Canada, abroad. There's one of our founders, Sean, just has huge deal flow. You know, one day we're looking at a Bitcoin miner, an NFT project. The next day we're looking at something, you know, revolving around carbon credits. The next day we're looking at like a gold discovery.
Okay.
The next day we're looking at minerals on the moon. The next day we're looking at something more traditional where it's like, you know, patches that are going to be distributed through a multi-level marketing business that change your mood. So we're looking at five or six different things a day. And then all of a sudden, after a couple, there was a period of time last January where for 2 weeks, everything that I ran into was e-commerce. And I didn't know a whole lot about e-commerce. I had met a few people in my neighborhood down here in Puerto Rico. There are about a half dozen people that have exited their Amazon businesses and then several into aggregators and then bought a house in the neighborhood that I live in right now. So I met a few of them. Then they mentioned they were Amazon sellers. I was like, that's cool. That's interesting. And then I saw a bunch of e-commerce stuff. We saw a couple of deals where they were doing Shopify roll-ups. We saw a deal where they were doing, they wanted to roll up Amazon agencies and some SaaS as well. A couple of the aggregators, a few of the more well-known aggregators pitched us, and they were raising, you know, some crazy valuation that everyone's gotten accustomed to hearing, like these numbers, like they were normal. It wasn't normal to me at the time. It was unlike anything I'd heard. And so I started doing a deep dive, learned about Thrasio, started to understand the space. That weekend I was at the pool, saw a couple of those sellers and just started doing a deep dive and asking them a couple of questions saying, you know, how big is your team? And they said, it's me and three or four, you know, VAs that are super helpful people that I met on Upwork that live in the Philippines. And I'm like, and that produces $3 or $4 million a year in sales. Like, how does that work? Like, it was just it was unlike any story I'd heard, and it became intoxicating. You know, it was just super interesting. And
it's interesting to me that, like, as someone that's like, I'm becoming an I, and you know, like looking into, I also am in real estate and property management and Airbnbs. And I was like, yeah, should I be into dumpsters or what's some passive, like things that doesn't require a lot of humans involved and like, you know, sure, things like that. And then,
storage.
So you're seeing everything. You're seeing a lot of interesting things. You're like, you've been all over the world. You've seen lots of interesting things. And then you like come across e-commerce and it's got you just like deeper. You're going deeper.
And I don't know why at first. It's like, you know, when like you hear a word, you hear a concept, and then all of a sudden you hear it like 15 more times the next week, mm-hmm, and you don't really know why that is. And when that's happened to me in my life, there's been certain times where I really felt like I was on the right track. And so it just kind of ended up being, that. Like it was just a series of moments where it was just, okay, this, I gotta look at this a whole lot deeper. Ended up canceling all the pitch calls that we were supposed to be on for the next week. And I was like, there might be something here. And that week when I'm talking to the sellers at the pool, and I said, you know, what's the difference between you and the 10 million sellers that won't end up exiting their business for eight figures? And there was some answers that would be the answers for any entrepreneur: the application of information, the attention to detail, motivation. There's going to be a point in the story where you could have given up and you don't, and you fight through. And there's going to be a point in the story where you have to innovate. So all the normal stuff you'd hear from any entrepreneurial journey.
For any business.
Right. And then just a lot of software. I use this software for keyword research, this for product research, this for my ads, this for my inventory, this for repricing. And at the time it was like, you know, it was 10 or now it's 15 billion in money had been put into the space for doing the roll up of the brands. And my simple question was, how many companies are there? You know, there's 114 that are doing this. And the answer was, you know, one. And decided on that moment that there would now be more than one, and reached out to Kazi. I had been the lead investor. He's our COO, Kazi Ahmed. He's an incredible guy. He, after graduating Harvard Business School, he went and built a software business that he exited. And then his second business, I was the lead investor on the last round. It was a roll-up of mental health clinics in the US, actually, dealing with psychedelics, and with like a data layer on top with remote patient monitoring. Super cool stuff for a different conversation, but I think you'd be interested in it. And so he had just exited it. And so I said, Kazi, I think I got the next, you know, deal. And he assumed I was talking about that something that we could invest in. And I said, no, I think there's a real opportunity here. And it'll be a year ago, April 7th. This will probably be it'll just have passed, I assume, when this comes out. Today we're doing this, it's April 4th. And since then we've been going 100 miles per hour. So
that's pretty cool to be here today, from my side, like a year later after that. You know, the first year is a big one, I think. And, yeah, it's pretty cool to be here right there and see what you guys have done already. I wanted to go back to one moment, cause I think it's those moments that kind of stand out to me. And what can you just share, like, you know, what you're feeling, kind of your confidence levels, maybe the moment itself, when you said, well, how many companies are doing the roll-up thing in the software space, and you heard that there was one, I can imagine, okay, that there was this, like, that's it. Like,
I couldn't sleep.
Like this different level of confidence.
I haven't slept well since, like in a good way.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
Yeah, it's the good stuff. It was so clear and so obvious. And then, of course, like people, it's hard. It's not going to work. And how are you going to integrate? And how are you going to do this and that? And like some of those problems are problems that we're still solving on a day-to-day basis
right now.
But it's like, but the desire and the team will solve the problems. The problems are hurdles, right? So we were excited that there were some hurdles because it made us know that maybe the barrier entry to what we were doing might be a little bit higher than what the brand aggregators were doing. And I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe that was what we told ourselves to feel confident about what we were doing, but we thought we had something special. And we saw a bunch of companies, like I said, doing it in Shopify, including WeCommerce. And they're publicly traded up there. They have been aggregating, apps, a little different in Shopify straight from the App Store. But we felt, you know, in the first like month or two, it was, you know, Thrasio, 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 WeCommerce, 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 and here's what we're doing, you know? And the story, it resonated, you know, and we were lucky enough that we'd all had a good amount of success in our lives. And so we had a large network of high net worth individuals and family offices and funds that were, you know, investors, and we all put in our own cash as well. and set
the
out.
The next problem came. But like, to me, like, not that I'm dismissing that, but I'm like, that happens like across business everywhere. Yeah. But like in an entrepreneur, when you're like, to me, when it's like, I'm looking for a solution, or I'm looking like, what is this in this thing that I'm supposed to find? And then I find it. And whether I know everything about it or not, I know when I find it. Like, I guess that's something that I can just imagine that. Like, once I've got my focus, I'm like, this is the thing that Marknology needs to be focusing on, or this is the direction we need to go. Thank you.
It's a great name.
Thank you. For anyone listening that doesn't know, because my name's Drew, not Mark. And, you know, Marknology, just being e-commerce, is in the middle of marketing and technology. And it's the combination of those two that really, you know, makes a good e-commerce.
I think that, you know, one of our pillars at Carbon 6 that we're talking about is innovation. And a lot of innovation is seeing around the corner and giving people that which they didn't even know that they needed. We didn't all know that we needed a phone in our hands. Not everyone knew you needed an iPad, but there's a bazillion, there's tremendous amounts of use cases.
Speed and innovation are, to me, like my major weapons. That's what I have. I'm a bootstrapper, not tons of capital, tons of resources, but it's always been speed and innovation. And much like Carbon 6 doing it in the software space, for me with Marknology, there was no roadmap. No one knew that they needed to be solving for Amazon or doing SEO or optimizing their images or anything like that. And it was like, you don't know what you don't know. Let me tell you about it. You know, that was 8-9 years ago, where it was like, hey guys, did you know you can optimize, you know, your brand on Amazon? And these are all the things you should be doing that you're not. Oh, and by the way, I need tools to do that. So for me, as like someone providing that service, the tools are just like, oh my God, I've been waiting for these, by the way. I've been waiting. I'm not a software developer, so that wasn't a space I wanted to pursue. But as a person doing the work, like as a team like Marknology, it was, we're only as good as our tools. And I mean, I've been in the space the last 11 years, I've seen a lot come and go. But it becomes it's all about the data. We're talking about the access of information, and not just to get the data, but I think, you know, there's an absolute art and science about interpreting the data, you know, and what to do with it.
100%.
We're going to talk about some of those features later, but no, just like when people say, hey, you know, what do you do? What's your passion? What's your thing? My thing is, I'm a problem solver. So I guess like some people get hooked up on like, well, what are all the things that can go wrong after we decide to do Carbon 6? You're like, no, that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
The vision is set. We know what we're going to do. I expect the problems. And honestly, like the difficulty to entry, like I'm pumped with the aggregators. I'm pumped with all the influx of capital. I'm pumped with Amazon getting harder. I'm pumped with Amazon coming down hard on review manipulation and giveaways and all those kinds of things. Because to me, as an entrepreneur and a founder, I say, if it's easy, that's not what I want to be focused on as far as like solving a problem. I want to be focused on the hard stuff.
I also think, you know, oftentimes the people that would have won when something is easy are the exact same people that will win now. They just make more money. So to wrap, go back to the
I had to pause there. That's like, that's a big statement. And I think
when we were selling coupons for Domino's, I was making $9 a sale, right? And that was door to door in the winter. That's very different than making a couple $100 a sale, selling internet to someone inside of a Walmart, almost being seen as part of a Walmart from a nice kiosk. The same people that do well in that business now are the same people that would have done well in that business before. The same people that have excuses in that business now are the exact same people that would have had excuses before. And they just make more money now. And maybe flame out in that business, flame out, takes them longer to flame out. In e-commerce, maybe they'll flame out a little bit quicker because it's a little more competitive. And I think that you have a space with just a gigantic TAM, and the sophistication sometimes can lag in some ways behind that, which, you know, is a normal part. And I imagine it must be so exciting over the last couple of years since the aggregators came, just the validation and the clear vision that the seller now has. How many different industries can you sell your business and then start another business where it can't compete, obviously, same category, but all the same systems, all the same tools, all your same knowledge base to build, sell, build, sell, build, sell, build, sell, build, sell. Not a lot of places let you do that.
I've done it 300 plus times, not exit, but build, repeat, rinse, you know, doing the same processes across Amazon e-commerce for different brands through the years. You know, it's a repeatable process, and it's not it's not rocket science. Everything has its own little set of problems to, you know, solve for and whatever. But what other industry is like that? What other industry the best man, woman can win? You know, if you're great at what you do and you sell a good product and your product's quality or your methods are strong, you can win in this space. You know, I've been beating the giants, like with, you know, a small local business's cookie shop, you know, outranking like the Nabisco's or the Chips Ahoy, just meaning that e-commerce is like level, meaning it's an ultimate leveler. And if you have the right information, we were going after keywords and the big brands are too slow to move on Amazon yet. So we're just, you know, you're outranking them.
I believe that's called Startup Hustle.
That's called Startup Hustle. Yeah. I love that.
And so seeing all that stuff ended up being like the innovation that I didn't know I needed for the next business idea was where I was kind of going with that.
I didn't know
I was looking for it, but it kept smacking me in the face. And it's been the most incredible ride since, you know. From there, we started going out and looking and sourcing businesses and understanding the lay of the land and, you know, meeting founders. It's amazing. And the vast majority, I'm proud to say, we've completed 12 acquisitions. And out of those 10 and a half, we'll call it, the founders are with us in some capacity. Many of them stayed on. In a few cases, they wanted to exit and wipe their hands of e-commerce and go into something else. And they're so excited about what we're doing that they stayed on for the journey. And now they're part of the team. And
I love that it's
this interesting thing where we're building it through acquisition. I could name so many of them. You know, we probably most of your listeners will be private label focused. We're kind of niche agnostic. We bought some tools in Merch by Amazon, including Pretty Merch, which is the largest tool in that space. Guy Harris and Cypress, amazing guys, the founder. We bought a few wholesale tools, large wholesale tools, Scan Unlimited, Supplier Scout. We bought a book arbitrage tool called Zen Arbitrage, and we're buying a suite of tools in private label. Our most recent acquisition was Seller Tools, and you know Brendan, who actually lives in my neighborhood, Brendan Morris, who was one of the first guys to have an 8-figure exit of his brand. I think it was like 2016 or 2017, I want to say.
Wow, that's early.
Yeah, and Troy Johnston. And so we're building this kind of like Voltron of entrepreneurs and building a community of entrepreneurs to help entrepreneurs. And it's really like a dynamic, fun, exciting, challenging, you know, ride.
I think that's cool for the founders that you guys have like built a team where people are working together. I think that's unique and very special. And, you know, what I love about the aggregators and the attention to our space is one, in some ways, not like more people are getting educated and more people are putting efforts into educating about the space that we're in, this industry that we're in. One, I love that, sharing the message of you can be an entrepreneur, you can find freedom, but also brands, businesses, manufacturers, you know, everyone putting out more knowledge and information and having funding to do that. And software is getting funded. And, yeah. You know, for me as a person that loves this space, I love that, the validation part too. But this founder thing is unique in that they've all done their thing and been successful, right, to an exit, but now get to be part of something that hasn't been done before. And then they're like, I get to stay in this thing, this space that I love, without just redoing exactly what I just did, but to get to be part of something and add to the bigger picture. You know, I think that's something unique you guys are doing. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, thanks. It's a lot of fun.
And I think by keeping them in, like, you know, just your introduction to e-commerce is young, you know, in regards to like learning quickly, like, you know, this getting introduction to it. But by keeping the founders there, you now have an internal community that will be centered and focused and experienced right from the get-go, which I think is very brilliant.
Like, it would be disingenuous to say like that was the vision. Like in the beginning, it was, none of us were engineers. We need to make sure we keep on the engineers, and we don't have a big background in Amazon. We need to make sure that we keep on some of the founders, but have found it to be in many ways, you know, the most rewarding part of the whole thing. You know, we stayed in total stealth until Prosper a couple weeks ago. And this is actually the first podcast that any of us are going on. We'll go from being pretty quiet to pretty loud.
Let's get loud.
Everything all over the place and releasing tons of content and being able to, because there's so many people that were the face of that tool or the face of that community, it should give us, you know, this kind of big tent community where we're able to get out a message
quickly.
Yeah, quickly, which is super fun. And well,
speaking of building that team, like,
yeah,
how are you finding integrating the team into the fold and assembling, you know, essentially a group of entrepreneurs that are all working together? Has there been any difficulty there or so far?
Yeah, I mean, there's difficulty every 5 minutes with that. But we have an incredible group of people in terms of the infrastructure. And I think a good combination of, you know, entrepreneurs from inside of Amazon, people like Leo Segovio, people like Brendan, who I mentioned, and Albert Farthy, who's at 24, has already built two businesses and exited both of them as a CTO. People that were entrepreneurs from outside of Amazon, like Kazi and myself and Nassim, people that did a little bit of both, like Clayton, our director of affiliates. And because there's a variation, I think, in personality and background, the team is in, I don't know, 15, 16 countries already. There's always someone, and because everyone looks at it like it's their company, one of the things that we did is, you know, nearly everybody who's been with us more than a month or two has some equity in the business. And we think that that's really important, is that if we want to recruit entrepreneurs and have them feel like they're not working for us and we're all working together, that you end up with a situation where after like all the normal problems of like communication, and I used to this way of doing Slack, and I'm used to this way of monday.com, and all the emotions that kind of go into that and messaging, we hope they all feel a lot of support, that if there's something that's confusing, that we're doing a good job of communicating and saying, you know, and that starts with like the legal language in the LOI can be confusing and off-putting. Right. And so throughout that process, you develop a rapport and an understanding and a communication. And then you have all these different people that are supporting it, some of which all kind of know each other. And of course it's challenging. You know, I think that as a CEO of a business that's doing M&A, you do spend a lot of your time on, you know, interpersonal relations if you're doing it right. And, you know, I also love that. It's one of my, you know, I think that, figuring out how to,
you are the CEO of Leadership Academy. It's about building independent leaders and entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And throwing them all together and finding some harmonious way to work, and kind of, you know, I say selling people, I think selling people or getting people to understand, I think, is probably a more benign way of saying it, but, rallied behind a vision, which is we're going to change the success rate of e-commerce sellers in some way and speed up through innovation and community and education and software. We're going to add some degree of turbo boost and rocket fuel to those who are already succeeding by finding a way to seamlessly integrate into a community that came long before we did.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
What is one carbon six software solution that sellers really need? I know exactly what you're going to say, because there's something that's fire that I can't wait to get my hands on myself.
I mean, everybody
myself.
Needs Pixelme, you know, especially with the TOS changes. And even before that, people know, you know, you get more raking juice, driving, people from Google and off Amazon, and it can help you maintain, you know, establish and maintain ranking.
Break that down just like real simply, like, I'm not sure that all of our listeners would know what Pixelme is.
Okay.
You know, so
Pixelme, I'll talk about what it started out as, the problem that we identified, and what it's solving.
Okay.
So it started out as one of the larger URL shorteners and retargeting pixel softwares used by marketers. Okay. You know, Procter & Gamble, Tatiana, many people. When we went under LOI, we saw on the roadmap that they had Amazon attribution on the roadmap. We made a condition of sale. Tom and Stefan, the amazing founders of Pixelme, will give you your price, but we want to speed up Amazon attribution, because at that time, everyone knew the world of ranking and the world of rebates was going to experience a cataclysmic shift, that there was a tornado that was brewing off in the distance that was headed for your house. And so, and they had started, Amazon had started giving you the a bonus back when you drove traffic from off of Amazon onto their platform. That created a sale. A 15% fee now went down to 5%. So we thought, in addition to what this tool Pixelme already does, it can be very helpful for Amazon sellers right off the bat. We then, again, kept the founders on. They worked with us to build an ad tech platform that is the first and only currently in the world where you can run your Google ads, your Facebook, Instagram, TikTok ads straight from the platform, driving traffic to Amazon with attribution to get the referral bonus back, with the kicker being what the company was, what the software was in the first place. It was the Pixel that will, you know, in the nicest possible way, stalk your customers around the internet and follow them. So whereas other, you know, ad platforms, if you can run Google ads, you get a sale, great. If you don't, you don't. With Pixelme, you install a pixel where you can retarget those customers that buy or don't buy, essentially building up an address book. You know, we just onboarded a few aggregators. We only released this tool the day before Prosper, and just onboarded a few aggregators. And I think we've been on like 85 demos this week with different agencies and aggregators. For an aggregator that maybe bought three home cookware brands, this allows them to cross-sell in a way that they've not been able to do before.
Holistic e-commerce, which is, I mean, my ultimate passion. Like, we're Amazon experts. I've been all in on Amazon, but my passion is very much holistic e-commerce and what's a healthy e-commerce ecosystem look like for a business. And that's where you are getting the ultimate data as much as you can. I mean, gold is data in the e-commerce world. And, you know, what he's talking about for our listeners is, you know, it's, to me, it's the Canva of, like, you know, media buying off Amazon in regards to, like, Canva brought, like, you know, any of us can be creators, almost like, versus having to be know how to do Adobe, right? So right there from your phone on Canva, if you don't know what it is, you can just, like, quickly edit photos, and it brought it down to the normal person in that regard. You didn't have to be a pro designer to really do stuff. And that's what Pixelme is in the same way in regards to even setting up just Amazon attribution as someone in the beta program, as someone's been there since the beginning. It's clunky. It's gotten better. It's a struggle. It's not easy to do. And so what it's doing is tying in this off Amazon effort that's so important and becomes even more important as on Amazon tactics get harder and more difficult and categories get harder to get into for new sellers and things like that. Kind of levels the playing field again, and brings that ad creation or bring it all in together into one spot. It makes it attainable for, you know, the average brand that's trying to learn, or let's say an aggregator managing a bunch or any number of solutions. I think it really is that big. I think it's as big as, and I don't know if you know, but Canva is very large. A simple idea in my mind, but that by bringing it and making it like reachable for someone that's not a designer to do stuff is huge. Yeah. Same thing here. I think it's going to be huge, not just for Amazon, but for sellers that are trying to find new opportunities where, you know, CPC costs are rising and all these things that you just hear on the Amazon side. This kind of levels the playing field. I'm super stoked. I'm going to be one of those demo calls because I had to wait a little bit to get on. But it's something that my team is excited to just jump into too.
Awesome. Yeah. It's see what we can do. The URL is pixelme.me. Check it out.
How long until these are all like, you know, where instead of going to the individual companies, we're in Carbon 6, like, yeah, simple question, but for anyone listening,
I'll give away as much as I'm comfortable giving away today. Within the next few weeks, so perhaps by the time this episode airs, you will be able to go to carbon6.io and access all the individual tools. From there, there'll be single sign-on. From there, there'll be a much more intimate marriage taking place over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months with an integrated data layer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
As someone's been in space a long time, what I can say to our listeners is there's something feels like an extra added value, or there's something special about being engaged with something from the beginning. Like, you know, whether my last one was the Ecom Cooperative, I got in there from event number one, and, you know, I've just felt like an OG, even though there's like four or five events so far.
We're sponsoring an event up there. I think it's the 13th or 12th.
ASGTG or the Seller Dinner afterwards.
Yeah, the Seller Dinner after we're sponsoring.
So I've been to every dinner. Like, that's how, you know, I'm there. Like, those are my boys. Yeah, those are my boys. I like supporting that community. And that was a community I joined from day one. So, you know, to anyone thinking about the software, there's just something about, and it will get better and it will evolve and it will acquire more businesses. And, you know, Carbon6 is going to continue to grow and change. And with anything new, there's things that happen, right? Like, I guess that's just common sense. But I get excited about something from the beginning, getting to know when people are still excited about it, getting that kind of like that first look at stuff. You know, this space is about innovation. So seeing that kind of stuff really come out, I think I'd encourage anyone to get involved as early as possible to learn this stuff, as it's really, like, you know, it's really new, it's really fresh. That's why everyone is excited about it. And I've heard Carbon6, there's a few times, I think this year, where someone would mention Carbon6, I'm in Miami, I'm somewhere, it's secretive, you know, as secretive as that hush hush. I'm like, no, I haven't heard anything. And I wasn't getting a lot, until Prosper, you know, when I kind of got more of the full picture. But, you guys have been working on this a long time. What's been the best part so far, specific to Carbon6?
Yeah, there's been a lot.
Probably the moment when you knew you were going to do it.
Yeah, there was a moment at Prosper where we had just received word that we completed our Series A, large fundraising round that we'll announce over the next couple of weeks. Got the investors involved that we really wanted to. The timing was incredible. We had just sponsored like the pool party the night before, and everyone's going, "Who are these guys? Who are these guys?" And we invested a lot in the stand and branding, and we're sponsoring a bunch of stuff. And being able to have a team meeting that day before the first day at Prosper and tell everybody the path that we're on and thank them for their hard work and feel like we're coming through on where we said we'd be in the way that we said we'd be there was a pretty special day.
I love that. I could tell the energy in your team. I didn't know the details, but I was at the pool party. So it was an awesome party, by the way. I got a couple of pics. And then the booth was amazing. You know, and the energy just there, I think they were doing some podcasts right when I was kind of coming up. They were like grabbing a couple of the speakers and doing some early podcasts. And there's just this energy, as I was getting introduced, and that's where I was like,
but that's the entrepreneurial hustle. I loved and spirit.
It. I could tell.
And we're going to do our, you know, we're going to do our best to maintain that and grow that, you know, forever.
Yeah. What is the culture exactly at Carbon6? Like, you talk about it, this entrepreneurial thing. It's easier said than done to keep that, you know, flowing through the team, not just from the founders.
Look, I think
what's the culture you're trying to create there?
I mean, we're looking for talent everywhere. We're hiring. So reach out to us, reach out to me personally, reach out on the website. Look, everyone has a voice. We are engaged in mastermind upon mastermind upon mastermind within the group, trying to make the best decisions. Where everyone, and I look at it like my job is just to call balls and strikes and officiate, and to bring in a bunch of experts and facilitate a conversation that allows us to make decisions with the geniuses that we have. And it's fun. It's cool. You know, it's all over. We have, you know, Philip, who we acquired his company several months ago, and now he's a general manager of our wholesale division, and he lives in Kenya, and we'll be on a Zoom call, and there's, you know, giraffes in the background, and
oh my gosh,
a bunch of us down here in Puerto Rico, and, you know, most of our operations team is up in Toronto. Kazi and Nassim. Nassim is our chief revenue officer, who's been a superstar since he started with us. He was went to Harvard Business School with Kazi, and they'd known each other for many years, and he's exited a bunch of startups as well. A lot of our operations and marketing is up there in Toronto, and, you know, we're all over. It's international, and we plan on taking the software internationally. We see huge white space and huge blue ocean everywhere that we look. And just you know, there's a lot of excitement and we're building and growing and building and growing. And the space is so big that we believe that for years and years and years, we should be able to look in front of us and see this much runway. And just continuing to think bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
I love that. I love that. No reason to think anything else or anything less. And I loved also that you pointed out that feeling of being able to, you vocalize it or verbalized it, where you said being able to back up kind of the promise that we had told the team and that this was what we were going to do and how big we were going to be and where we were going to go. And, you know, have that meeting, that moment where you're just like, hey, guys, I told you, you know, just keep believing in the team.
Yeah. And you did it. And you all effing did it. You did it.
Yeah. I love that. I had that moment last year with the team, me and my sister, who was employee number two.
That must be awesome.
Working with and we made everyone that was a contractor, an employee, a full-time employee, yeah. Which is just a small goal. But for us, we kind of got the last person, you know, as a FTE and, you know, and we gave a bunch of raises, you know, at the end of the year and kind of just saw where we were. And I had one of our younger guys that started at, he was a sales agent at a AT&T, I think, doing sales. And I kind of poached him. He just had a hunger and I poached him. And he's been there a couple years now with us. And had just went from being like in that to like literally leading calls with big brands. And like, you know, he's doing his thing and was able to give him some raises. And, you know, it was to my sister, not to myself, but I think he wouldn't care if I shared a story, but he was just like, you know, you guys told us that you guys were going to make this happen. And, you know, you told us if we just stood with you that like, we, you know, we'd get paid. And I hope there's a lot more of those coming down the road, you know, but he just was like, you guys, you backed up what you said you're going to do. And we were all noticing. And, you know, it was just a special moment that I think I can relate to a little bit there, where it's just like, man, you set this vision, you believe it your hardest, you hope they believe it with you, you know, and you're just like so thankful that people are helping you build this thing. And I don't think they see it as all of them, but like, there's no way I would have been able to get to the point of raises if they hadn't helped us build it, you know? And so it was a pretty full circle moment.
Where do you go from here?
I was going to ask you the same question, but you flipped the script. You know, for me, it's just like continuing to like, I'm finally in this point where I feel like I get to serve the team. And I feel like I'm this like, you know, coach trying to get to the championship.
Yeah.
That's like really trying to just focus on talent. And, you know, I've got this kid that I think is going to move from Wichita, like this kid I met, I say kid, he's 25 and, not a kid at all, but you know, just, he has this passion.
42, I call my friends kid.
It's okay. I don't mean any disrespect, yeah, like, but right. I just get fired up. And I met him, he has this passion to change his family legacy and, their cycle. And, he's had a very super hard life. He's super kind. And to me, that's just something special, especially when their life's extra hard and they just come out gentle as hell. And I want to show him what his potential is. I see it, you know. And so for me personally, it's like keep building this team and building partnerships and just making Marknology one of the best damn agencies in the Amazon space at what we do. And as far as a company, it's just continue to bring professionalism to the industry. I'll be honest with you. I really love what we do. I have a passion for it. I think what we do is the brains in the space are amazing and all those things. And there should be respect way before having to get to an exit, you know, for a lot of people that do what we do, even all the way down to account managers. And mm-hmm. And so for me, in a space that's kind of the Wild West, which has made it, you know, a level playing field, as well as be seen as a community that's bringing professionalism to what we do and leveling up everybody along the way. I think those are some broad goals, but like, I don't really have an end in mind. It's not like get to this revenue number or this employee count or whatever. It's just continue
that's
to be
probably
better.
Probably a good indication of you truly loving what you do.
Yeah. I love doing that. I love team building. I love leadership. You know, I think that's why we connect in that regard.
For sure.
you know, it's almost like some people are talented and then some can just like spot or develop talent, you know, almost like a producer. There's the artist and there's the producer and some do both, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I feel like I can see people's talent before they see it. And I get excited about that. Like, it's just almost as if it's even better than if I'm doing it myself, you know, to see them realize that.
Awesome.
Can I flip the script and ask you the same question, both personally and Carbon 6? I mean, you guys have so much secrecy around it. It seems like everything is what's next and you guys are moving super fast with a Series A coming down the road. But let's talk about you personally and then Carbon 6, you know, the next year roadmap, what's coming up.
So they're very intertwined. The answer is very intertwined.
Of course.
And I think we've hit on a lot of the, I guess, the principles or the tenets or the core values of Carbon 6, and what we're going to do. And in some ways, the answer is just run the playbook, right? Run the playbook, call audibles when you need to make audibles. Keep going faster, go faster by having a bigger critical mass in terms of the team. You know, we've gone from, you know, me and Kazi, and then I think like Jill was employee number three, to a team of 95 or so today, and we'll be at 250 in 3 months and probably 1,000 this time next year. And that'll allow us to move faster, both in one direction as well as, you know, in several directions at once. And I think that it's as we go from a small company to a small medium to a medium to later to a large company. I've spent a lot of time talking to some of the guys at Thrasio over the last few months, just in anticipation of like what changes, how you keep the culture as you grow to that scale in that, you know, kind of explosive timeline, because that's the path that we're on. I think it's maintaining that entrepreneurial spirit. One thing we're going to be releasing for all of our employees and contractors very soon is a program where they can all start their own e-commerce business. And, you know, we'll be doing like probably 0% loans for that.
Oh, that's awesome.
And gifting it. And the idea is that we're all serving the entrepreneur, because that's what we're here to do, and make their boats go faster. And we're also here to help you, you know, become an entrepreneur. And hopefully one day you leave because you're making so much money for yourself that's what makes sense. Or maybe you're having so much fun, you don't, and maybe that's even better, or maybe it's not. But you know, I think staying, you know, feet on the ground, down to earth, and continuing to innovate and provide better and better solutions, you're going to see some really incredible things in terms of some of the acquisitions we'll be announcing over the next few months, some of the creative ways that we're going to integrate those, some of the different kind of bundles and add-on pricing and things that we're able to do, you know, en route to our goal of becoming, you know, this one day where, and we're a ways away, but you just need one login. You need one login and it does a lot for you. Additionally, we're putting together a full training academy. I know you and I spoke about it. You know, so many people we hear talk about some of the early training programs with ASM 1 and 2 and 4. And, you know, by virtue of the fact that we're building this huge big tent and we're partnering with so many different people all over the space, we're going to, you know, in our attempt to become a value add in the space, create a really robust training academy that Leo and his team and several, you know, advisors are helping us create. And we're going to be, you know, continuing this big tent approach, expanding into a bunch of different markets internationally, and continuing to execute on the game plan that is evolving, but we feel really confident is going to be a huge value add for everybody. No matter what type of seller you are, no matter where in the journey you are, from trying to source your first product to trying to figure out how to do your taxes to getting your business ready, to exit, we want to be part of the sophistication through innovation and community, that the space is, it's going to happen with or without us. And, you know, our job is to be as helpful a part of that as humanly possible.
I love that. And I couldn't say, honestly, Marknology is extremely aligned with that same mission.
The first time we talked, I think we were supposed to talk for 15 minutes. We talked for a couple hours.
Yeah, exactly. I've been looking to help sellers and brands and solve for that. And that's built Marknology, because I was just looking like, oh, you need help with international expansion. Oh, you need help with tracking organic keywords, or that's why you find the software partners or the SaaS partners, or who's great with social, or how do we get this? How do we get that? Constantly looking to serve. We're talking about Amazon, and Amazon's a platform that's built for the customer. So to me, it just made a lot of sense to build a company that looks to serve as well, and aligning instead of looking for easy or things like that. So absolutely, I couldn't put it in better words myself about just looking to continue to innovate. And this is the thing, like, you can't really have that strong of a plan. Don't obsess about your plan. You have a plan, you have a playbook. Yeah. This is e-commerce. It changes daily. Totally. So even, you know, having too strong of a playbook or too strong of a play without being able to pivot or move or change what that looks like is a bad move. You know, you need to be able to stay flexible and quick and fast, and you know, the playbook will change.
Yeah, sometimes you got to change. You got to call an audible, and sometimes you got to completely change your offense.
I definitely have to link up with you about, that program that you're going to have there. And I think that could be a great offer to get people working at Carbon 6, you know, help them create that business or whatever that looks like. I've been trying to be super creative within Marknology, where the brands we're building and getting equity in, our employees now get equity in those businesses that we're building.
Ooh, that's amazing. So
a cool kind of spin on a 401k kind of thing. So instead of exiting them like an aggregator, the employees, as they stay with us, build up equity in the business.
And that's really the essence of the point of working for yourself, which is depending on something that you have some degree of control over, outcome of, where you don't have, you're not going to control what happens in a boardroom at some of the companies in your 401k. You should, being in the stock market, it's a good idea. It's not a bad idea. But the motivation that your people have, knowing that they're going to have a direct impact on their situation, is incredible. Good for you.
Imagine having a young 22-year-old designer, at Marknology, that's done a rebrand for an Amazon business that was kind of lacking on the branding side and doing very well. And he creates the A+ pages and the brand guide and the photography, and that business has an exit. And he's 22 years old. No, he didn't do everything himself, but he's able to point to that and say, I had this amount of shares or equity and I did that. And,
for your clients, just on the concept of no one's ever going to work harder for your business than you are, having that be so many different people's business means you have a lot of people with that juice and that excitement and that gas in the tank all going in the same direction. Kudos.
Yeah. I love what you just said about helping them build an e-com business. And it's like got my head spinning, because for me, it's just been, how do I create this entrepreneurial culture where I'm not creating all these entrepreneurs within Marknology, because we have a lot of specialists that aren't entrepreneurs. They're designers and they're advertisers. But I want them to have that same spirit and that happiness and that, to me, fulfillment that comes with, we're humans and we're made to create. I believe that all of us at some degree, whether it's food or art or families or whatever we are, humans create. And giving them the ability to do that and create a different lifestyle for themselves, that kind of thing that entrepreneur brings, that freedom, whether it's like with our schedules or international exposure, being able to travel. How do you do that within an agency? It's not like the same as within sellers. Sure, you're helping sellers do that. How do I do that within an agency where my team doesn't leave me to go to a company in New York with a Series A that can offer them $30,000 more? You know, it's becoming culture and investing in them, whether it's a course, whether it's a training course, which I'm stoked about, because I think what we do can be trained, that academy, I think done right. You can have a tool. It's like, you can have a tool. If you don't know how to use it, it's useless, right? So understanding how these things work will be super cool. And it's super cool you guys are launching that along with the software and all the tools.
Yeah,
I personally like, yeah, it takes a lot of time to learn all these things. Like as someone that's learned so many softwares, and it's like, having someone, a lot of the software companies aren't built like that. It's two or three guys in a shop, that have built something pretty cool and it's made to go automation, and you have to learn how to use it or it doesn't work. I've just signed up for tons of stuff that I never figured it out. So you guys putting in that time, that's investment into, the customers. I'm super excited to see where you guys go. I'm going to be at a ton of events this year. I'm already tired. I think it's April. So I know you guys are going to do amazing things.
And I want to go back just a step and say, for anyone who is interested, it's careers at carbon6.io. For anybody who's interested and thinks they have something to add to the team, you know, always looking for great people.
Yeah, I'll do something special and I'll throw it in the show notes of this episode.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll add that too. We're going to have all of Justin's and Carbon6's contact information in regards to like getting a hold of them. Where can you follow the brand? Where can you get engaged? Where can you sign up? We'll have all of that in the show notes for anyone that's in their car listening or is not near a computer right now. Also throw in that careers link for anyone that's interested in seeing what it's like.
And I was real, I didn't want to get on here and pitch our 12 tools. You know, there'll be some details I'm sure we can put in there. I wanted to keep it as little sales purpose driven as possible. But just, thank you for having me on. This is the first podcast that I've gone on since we came out of stealth and the ability to tell the Carbon6 story. And for everyone who's listening, we care and we want to connect and we can't wait to go down the road with you together.
Yeah. To our listeners, Justin just very successful before even coming to Carbon6. I know whatever him and his team touch, I think half the names he mentioned as far as the co-founders of some of the softwares that have come on board, I have yet to meet, but know their softwares, by name and it's just really powerful and awesome thing that's happening there for the price point. I heard the price point. I was just blown away at how affordable, it's coming to market. So I think, the money you can make with like one of those 12, your money back for whatever you're paying is nothing. So, we didn't even talk about the alerts and all the other things like some of your software can do as far as, value to the sellers and what's there. So this is just really an intro to all our listeners. We want to talk about, the why Carbon6 is here. And what it can do, we'll continue to release. I know maybe I'll even get you back on the podcast and we can do a second episode a year from now on what's changed in the last year and where we are. So thanks again to our listeners. Thanks again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. And thanks again, Justin. Excited to see what you're bringing to space.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll see you next time, Hustlers.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.